Cryptosporidium, come on.
Hey, you know what? That's not an actual word.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 387, recorded on June 2nd, 2015.
Welcome to the 387th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 220th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback. Ooh, little history lesson for you.
Yep. So yeah, we're going to have one, finally, after a long while. We didn't have one, but this time we took the time to do it. So this is sort of like a short turnaround. Since we recorded the podcast, the previous podcast a few days ago because of delays and all that, yeah. So
these things, they happen.
So what have you been up? What have you been playing, Paul?
Candy Crush.
That's it.
Pretty much. I mean, I was helping my friend move still, and he just an hour ago got into his own apartment. So I really haven't had that kind of time like I normally do.
Hmm. Yeah. I've been playing Halo.
I'm so sorry
edition.
For you.
Why?
I don't think highly of Werewolf.
Halo.
Halo.
Not Werewolf.
No, I think very highly of Werewolf. Don't get me wrong. I don't. I'm sorry. That was a Freudian slip. I was looking at notes for something else.
Yeah, because they, as a apology for some of the multiplayer problems that were on launch. Which I didn't have because I didn't play any multiplayer. They released the Halo 3 ODST expansion free over the weekend, and I haven't started playing it. I mean, I enjoyed the campaign, but I was hoping they would include Firefight, which is basically the Horde co-op mode for Halo, and they didn't include that. I think they're including it for Halo 5, which is going to be later this year, which is disappointing because I really enjoyed the co-op Horde mode. You know, in which you have to fend off monsters invading from all, and you just have to see how long you can last. So, I mean, you know, I mean, the Halo 3 ODST has a great story, but I'm busy trying to do all the games first so that, you know, so that it's like, because the thing is, I played the first three, I never played 4, but I don't want to play 4 until I play all the first three again. And all I remember is that, gee, these campaigns are really, really long.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So anyway, we do have a gaming flashback, and take it away, Paul.
Destroy All Humans! Exclamation point. Destroy All Humans is an action-adventure game developed by Pandemic Studios and published by THQ. It was released for the PlayStation 2 and Xbox on June 21st of 2005 in North America, and on the 24th in Europe. The game is set in 1959 in the U.S. and parodies the lifestyle, pop culture, and politics of this time period. The player controls
Cryptosporidium.
Cryptosporidium 137, a reference to the protozoan parasite, a member of the fictional Furon race of alien
Furon,
life.
Furon, I think I was supposed to say. It's sort of like Furon. Like, I don't know if you watched the Chronicles of Riddick movies, have you?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Who has come to Earth to harvest DNA from humans and continue the cloning process of his species. The game begins with a Furon, Cytoplasm 136.
Cryptosporidium, come on.
Hey, you know what? That's not an actual word.
It's an actual, what's it called, microscopic creature.
You can't spell Gryffindor. Hovering over a launch site with military personnel testing a rocket. The rocket is launched and destroys the ship that leaves him fatally wounded and captured by the U.S. Army. Sometime later, Cryptosporidium 137 travels to Earth with another Furon, Arthropox 13. Crypto, as he comes to be known, comes with the intention of rescuing 136, while Arthropox, nicknamed Pox, desires to extract human brain stems for study. Crypto arrives at Turnip Seed Farm in the Midwest, where Pox mistakes cows for Earth's dominant life form, which that's kind of interesting. The Majestic Agency is alerted to the Pharaon presence when decimates an army brigade passing through the area. Pox, communicating with Crypto through a hologram-like device, then reveals to Crypto that the reason he requires human brainstems is because they contain pure Pharaon DNA handed down to them by Pharaon scouts eons ago when the Pharaons stopped on Earth for quote-unquote shore leave following a war with Mars, which was rendered uninhabitable by the Pharaon Empire. After several missions in the Midwest town of Rockwell and the California suburb of Santa Modesta, Crypto and Pox become aware of the Majestic and begin crippling government attempts to stop them by performing acts such as destroying Area 42, a parody of Area 41, with an atomic bomb and killing an Air Force general named Armquist. Soon, the government seemingly surrenders to the Pharaons. Crypto meets Silhouette, a leader of Majestic, in front of the Capitol. After a brief scuffle with Silhouette, Crypto discovers that he is a woman. A Silhouette unveils the RoboPrez. Why are you doing this to me? Which is a towering mech controlled by President Huffman's brain. Crypto defeats RoboPrez in his flying saucer and then defeats Silhouette in a final battle of Octagon, and then an interrupting squid shows up. Okay, never mind. A parody – that was an in-joke for anyone who didn't get it. A parody of the Pentagon. As Silhouette dies, she reveals that there are other Majestic divisions all over the world. Crypto, however, is confident that without Silhouette's leadership, Majestic will be totally powerless to resist the Fuhrer takeover. The game ends with Huffman making a televised speech assuring America that the recent events were the work of communists who have poisoned the U.S. water supply, and that as a result, testing centers have been set up all across the country to scan people for harmful toxins. People are then shown being herded reluctantly by army soldiers into strange machines, apparently for brain stem extraction. Huffman is then revealed to be Crypto in disguise. Destroy All Humans received mixed positive reviews from critics and spawned 3 sequels.
I still have no idea what a player does in this game. I hate the copy.
It's a 3D isometric, and you run around extracting people's DNA and stuff like that. The thing is that it has all the aesthetic of Mars Attacks, know, with the green alien that looks like a gray, but it's green, you know, with big eyes and all that, and menacing look. So, and it's mediocre. It's not great, it's not good. But the reason why I included it this time is just because every time you go into the video game store, you see the boxes for it. Destroy All Humans, Destroy Humans 2. You know, and all that stuff. So it's just very ubiquitous. You know, Turnip Seed Farm sounds like something you'd find in Harvest Moon.
Possibly.
And one of the stories that I was gonna do, but I didn't think it was big enough for it, but we can discuss it briefly now, is that Harvest Moon is coming not only to Nintendo, but it's coming to PC and it's coming to mobile.
Lovely.
They haven't said how much of the game is going to be in the mobile version, but I just wonder if this is a harbinger of more Nintendo titles. You know, this is not a Nintendo-produced game. I think it's Natsume who makes Harvest Moon. I just wonder
if this... I don't recall off the top of my head. It's been a while.
Yeah, I wonder if this is the beginning of a migration of a lot of Nintendo games to mobile, because we've seen, you know, there's been this thing about Nintendo and mobile for the past few years in which people are just waiting for Nintendo to release things on mobile games.
Well, I mean, it's coming. We know for sure that it is.
And, you know,
at least they want us to know this.
Third party, this is the first major Nintendo, and it's not an exclusive, but basically you associate Harvest Moon with Nintendo, right? It's the first major game that I've seen that's confirmed to be coming to mobile. So,
okay.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news, and now I'm very interested to see what you're going to think, or the comments that you're going to make from this, since this is squarely in your area. Indie Dev discusses where money goes, and this comes to us from Kickstarter. Don Manalili, an indie developer whose project You Are Not the Hero revealed what he called a rant about where the money raised by his Kickstarter project goes. Now, rant, it doesn't sound much like a rant. The tone of his post sounds more like instructional, and it's sort of like, you know, a teacher telling, you know, kids, this is what happens to your money. You know. In his update, he stated, "As you are all aware, I've been reluctant to hand off a set release date for the project. As an indie developer, I believe that release dates are the best ways to sabotage a game. Too often we've seen amazing-looking games in concept and theory only to be disappointed by lackluster experience that looks and feels nothing like what was presented. For an indie developer, time is of the essence, despite our best intentions to make the best game we possibly can. We don't exactly have deep pockets because our relatively wildly successful Kickstarter project, I forgot to mention, he raised $91,000 for a game that had a $12,000 goal back in November of 2013. I believe the budget will allow me to take a little more time to nurture the project. Of course, as a new developer, I've already told you of the many situations I hadn't foreseen. In the indie development world, finding and engaging and keeping asset providers, contractors, teammates, or partners is a full-time job. Turnover rate is worse than Walmart, so having to find another artist, musician, or programmer that can match the style, theme, or experience respectively happens often, even more so over the course of 2 years. Most, if not all, contractors are allowed to work on multiple projects at once to sustain themselves, and often they'll find a reason to leave a project over the course they'll find a reason to leave over the course of a year. Up to now, I've worked with approximately 14 pixel artists, 5 programmers, 4 bust artists, 7 concept artists, and 1 musician, Awesome Darren. I don't want to throw my teammates under the bus, though. Darren, Steven, and Drew have been with me since they joined the project." He then broke down... What?
What's Sorry.
He then broke down what the $91,000 was spent on. Mm-hmm. $9,600 for the Kickstarter and Amazon cut. $23,000 was taken by the United States tax. Operational costs, which include hardware, travel expenses, online presence, tax help, and backer awards, cost $15,800. Development, writing, and PR cost $15,000. Art, music, and code cost $18,600. And the current total that he spent so far is $82,000, give or take $1,000. He then announced a Steam Early Access launch date of June 1st for $15. So, yeah, you giggled for a moment. What was that all about?
Well, okay, these people have been with me since they joined the project. And it's like, yes, I've been living here ever since I moved in. So that was that. Okay, so let's break this down a little bit.
This seems
like a horrible mismanagement of funds, frankly.
Really?
I don't buy this like for a second. Okay, Kickstarter and Amazon's cut almost $10,000. Granted, like you're not going to get around that. But as far as tax liability, this guy needs a better accountant. This guy absolutely needs a better accountant. This is not income. You need to write things off. Like you should be writing off this $18,000. Because you're trying to create a business. So, I mean, that whole thing right there, that's fishy. I want to know where that $23,000 went. Or I want to know if this guy's going to take my advice and have a CPA look at his account, look at his tax records, because that's just completely wrong to me. He needs to itemize. Operational costs, $15,000. Hardware, travel expenses, basically he wanted to go somewhere and have his company pay for it. Online presence, tax help, really? You need tax help? Dude. My accountant costs $300 a year. So let's not even go there.
Tax help.
Tax help, right there, or operational costs.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of that sounds like crap too. Development, writing, and PR.
Well,
seriously, how much? So none of this money is going to the game.
No, he did say the money was going to the game. I mean,
no money is going. Yeah,
art, music, and code.
$18,000.
Development, writing, and
dollars is going to the game.
Well. Development is a catch-all phrase for everything.
He's pissed away almost $90,000. And this is why I don't back things on Kickstarter. He doesn't know what he's doing with his money. Art, music, and code? Really? Like, that whole thing is like where this whole freelancers leaves nonsense comes in. Art, music, and code. He has mismanaged this money.
Well, here's the thing. He's also, like I said, he's very new at this, and he's learning as he goes along.
Right? I mean, this just doesn't even make sense, is the problem. Operational costs? He's spending a dollar on making stuff for every dollar that he spends as an asset to the game? Dude, what the hell? Go sit in a freaking Starbucks. Like, this is nonsense. This is nonsense.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, have you ever attempted a something like this?
This is nonsense. This is self-aggrandizement is where all this money has gone.
Okay. So, Paul, you can contact at...
I go right ahead. Hey, Don, feel free to contact me. This is... I don't believe your numbers.
Now, for those of you who don't know what You Are Not the Hero is, because it's a role-playing game done in the NES style. However, it has a little twist. Now, you know how it is when you're...
Dude, it's all pixel art? Are you freaking kidding me?
Stop. Let me describe this game. So, you know how when you're the hero of one of a typical NES RPG, you just wander into people's homes, take what you want, and leave?
Mm-hmm.
This game takes the perspective of one of those people who live in those homes, and the heroes come in, take what they want, and leave with her grandmother's heirloom, and she wants it back. So it's to deconstruct a lot of the tropes of how entitled heroes are in Nintendo RPGs. So anyway, it's a nice concept. I also backed it just for the $15 for the game and nothing else, you know, just because I found it intriguing. So we'll see. I mean, the thing is that, you know, they're a lot better than what a lot of other, Kickstarter people have done, like the people from Mansion Lord. They vanished. You never heard from them again. You know, some people, he talks about in the article about how sometimes you have these other people on Kickstarter who the money dries up and they just vanish because they're unable to complete the project and all that. So, you know. It's a good game, from what I've seen so far, and the writing's good. So we'll see. There's some games that I didn't think were that vanished that actually came back, like Comics Writer, which was strange. I'd given up on it. It was something that I backed like a couple years ago, and it was basically software to help you write comics, right? You know, the panels and all that stuff. So we'll see. Anyways, I'd like to hear what you think of this, people out there in the podcast listening world. I mean, Paul, let me ask you, what would you say to him? I mean, yeah, I already heard, you know, ranting about you have to get better.
You need
management.
Step one, get a better accountant.
Right.
Or stop doing your taxes yourself.
Yeah. But the question I would ask is, would you ever attempt a Kickstarter project?
I would never say never.
Okay. You know, by the way, Kickstarter is not the only crowdfunding thing. There's also Indiegogo. And I wonder, and also GoFundMe, but that's more broad, you know. I wonder how Indiegogo works. I wonder if they have a different charging system than Kickstarter does.
It's not like you have to go and reach there. From what I understand, you don't have to reach your goal. You just get a portion of whatever you...
Mm. And there's also Desura, which is actually a place where a lot of people release their stuff so that they release their indie games so that, you know, they can get an opinion from people about it. I mean, a lot of, you know... Do you know what Desura?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Desura. Desura.com?
No, repeating it isn't going to help clarify it. It's
never
like
mind.
You can't use the word in the definition of the word.
Okay. So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Fallout 4 announcement coming June 3rd, and this comes to us from Kotaku. It's official, Fallout 4 is coming. Bathsheba just put up a countdown. Bathsheba, isn't that what it says?
Bethesda.
Oh, whatever.
As in the town in Maryland.
Big deal for not knowing every town in Maryland.
Bethesda just put up a countdown timer leading up to the announcement, which will apparently take place tomorrow. It's curious to see how Bethesda announced the game before their E3 conference, which takes place on a 24-hour countdown clock.
What?
You just you're moving, which takes place on June 14th. What are you talking
about? Stop moving the copy. It's curious to see Bethesda announce the game before their E3 conference, which takes place on June 14th, but it's happening. Yesterday, a person familiar with goings-on at the company told me that a 24-hour countdown clock would be launching today and lead up to a Fallout 4 announcement this week. Looks like that's true, although, of course, it's possible they'll drag it out with an extended ARG or other teasers leading up to the 14th. Fallout 4, a sequel to Bethesda's 2008 post-apocalyptic RPG, is one of the most anticipated games in recent history, by everybody except me, apparently, and it's been driving everyone nuts for years now. Back in December of 2013, casting documents were leaked indicating the game would be in Boston.
Wait, you didn't play Fallout? You don't like Fallout?
Really? What part of I don't like first-person shooters do you not get?
Well, fun thing, it's not a shooter, it's an RPG. I mean, it's a first-person RPG, much like The Elder Scrolls. It is only a shooter because instead of having bows and arrows and sword, they have guns. You can have melee weapons in that, too. And the thing is that, you know, you actually, like an RPG, you have something called a Vax system, in which you can aim at a point, you have a character, aim at a character, aim at a body part if you want, or just aim at the general character and try to hit them. And, you know, it's sort of like rolling dice, depending on where you're trying to hit. So it's not a first-person shooter, but it is a first-person... I would call it a first-person explorer, because that's what I did mostly when I was playing Fallout 3, is just, you know, exploring all over the place. And a lot of people did not like Fallout New Vegas, and they're eager for a proper sequel, because Fallout New Vegas was done by Obsidian, it was buggy, it was less focused than Fallout 3. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to be at the Bethesda conference where they're going to be probably unveiling Fallout 4. So it should be interesting. And I know a lot of people there are excited over this. I mean, when the news hit earlier today, it's like a bomb went off on Twitter. I mean, everybody was just commenting on it. Sorry you don't like Fallout 3. Or, you know, Fallout 3 you can get for a couple of bucks now. Do you like Elder Scrolls type games? Paul?
No, not really.
Okay. Just wondering. But, you know, you are the hero, sort of like a Zelda game, so when that comes out, maybe you'll be interested in that.
Well, which is lovely, except there's no comment about the game... never mind.
Wait, what? No comment about the game what?
Never mind, let's just keep it moving.
What's wrong?
Nothing, let's just keep it moving.
Okay, so here's another item that I think that you might have a very strong opinion about. New Steam refunds policy makes some developers concerned, and this comes from Rock Paper Shotgun. A new update to Steam's refund policy looks like it's what gamers have been crying for, a way to far more easily get their money back when buying Steam games which don't work on their machines. Oh, this sounds familiar, doesn't it, Paul? Except it wasn't Steam, it was good old games, wasn't it?
I don't remember, but I think I'm going to have to go check.
Grim Fandango? You bought it from good old
Yeah,
games.
No, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember which one it was.
Okay.
I think it probably was Steam.
No, I thought it was good old games because you were complaining about the customer service.
Yeah.
Okay. Within 14 days of purchase, and so long as you've played for under 2 hours, they'll give you a refund. However, Rock Paper Shotgun spoke to some developers who are concerned that the new system makes it extremely simple for Steam users to keep non-DRM games and then get their money back. Games that have opted not to use Steam's DRM, which of course usually were perceived as a customer-friendly decision, can now be purchased, copied over into a different directory, and then a refund requested. With a new no-quibble policy, they'll get the money back, and they'll have a working copy of the game remaining on their hard drive. It is essentially the same shady antics that were possible when brick-and-shelving game stores would provide refunds on DRM-free boxed PC games. It was, in fact, a huge reason why boxed PC games had DRM. It's also worth noting that any trading cards dropped in the opening 2 hours of a game, which, of course, is prime dropping time, can as well be sold before the refund is issued. That means these new changes go so far as to provide customers a way to make a profit from buying and refunding games. Then there are the enormous problems that raises for developers whose games are under 2 hours. Games like Dear Esther, Gone Home, and the original Portal are designed to have short running times. Once completed, there's nothing, other than honor, to stop a customer requesting a refund for a game they've completed. Other more tricky issues spring to mind. Organized mob use of Steam reviews are already commonplace, but require the user to have purchased and played the game. With a new system now in place, it'll be simple for such organized groups to buy a game, review bomb it, then get refunds. And God knows how this will work with games that are set to the offline mode. By the way, the organized bombing, we've seen this with certain games in which Gamergate used the Steam reviews to get games classified under stuff they aren't, you know. So, Paul, what do you think?
You know what? I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. I'm really pissed off that, you know, still, I mean, I'm talking about it forever, about whichever one, I think it was Steam, that wouldn't give me my money back. And it should, I mean, they should have some kind of test button if for those who are unsure, because I mean, who the hell knows what you have in your computer? Some of us.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that people who don't put DRM in their games, they have their reasons for it. You know, people will buy it off Steam, you know, then refund it, but still have an entire copy of the game, just put it in a new hardware drive. You know, if you're making a game, here's a question. If someone gets a refund for something, I don't know how this would work with video games. Do the developers have to give back the money?
I know Steam, they don't. It's not that they have to give it back. It just is not part of their check. Like, they never get it in the first place.
Yeah, so that's problematic for developers. You know, and there
Here's
are
an idea.
Games.
Make a better game that people don't
no,
mind paying for.
There are some. Wait, are you saying you have to make a better game than Dear Esther, or Going Home, or Portal? They're 2 hour
well,
games.
Well, do you think that the majority? Well, no, that's
do
not
they
what
have
I'm talking
to be
about.
Do you have
I'm
to
not,
make
Excuse me.
Okay.
I'm not talking about specifically 2 hour games. I'm talking about all the other game developers that are like, "Oh, this is going to cut into our profits." So, you know what? Make a good game that people don't mind paying for. Audible and Amazon aren't having a problem with this policy. People are still self-publishing books.
I don't know, because well, what about games that are short? You know, are you required to make short? Are you required to make games that are 8 hours or 20 hours long? Or because I mean, Portal. I mean, that was one of the best games of the year, and it was like an hour actually.
Right, and I definitely think that there needs to be some. I'm not going to say review, but there definitely needs to be some context. You know, the player. You know, the developer should probably submit a notice if their game isn't intended to be over 2 hours long, so that anybody who would be affected with this policy on Steam can be notified or notify Steam. And they're like, oh, this is not eligible for that because it's under 2 hours long. We'll give you half your money back or whatever.
But, yeah, but, you know, there's some games have variable lengths. I mean, what might take, you know, an hour for me to complete might take 5 hours for you to complete.
Right.
You know, so it's this refund policy needs to have more context and, you know, be better written. You know, I mean, there has to be some checks and balances, because you can't just say, well, if you know, if you play for 2 hours, then you can just under 2 hours, you can just return it. You know, I mean, here's the thing. What about if just have the review policy for games that simply don't work? You know, I mean, if are you saying that it's bad to buy a game from the store shelf because you can't return that, but you can return this, you know?
I didn't say that.
I mean,
and if you buy a game from a store, they'll and you open it, they'll only exchange it for
the same game.
Same not, game, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe store credit. Depends on the store I get. No, it has to be the same game, or else they're just gonna, you know.
I mean, almost every store has been doing this since the late 80s.
I don't know. I just think that a refund should be just for games that don't work on your computer, that you can just submit
right.
something saying it's not working on my computer, I can't play it, period. You know, it's not I don't like it, You know, I mean, there's some, there has to be something on the consumer side, don't you think, in which you have some sort of caveat emptor. You know, it's like, well, this game sucks. Well, you shouldn't have bought it then. You should have done your research, do reviews, do your due diligence. You know, if you buy a movie and it sucks, you know, if you go to a movie theater and you watch a movie and you come out and say, I really hated that movie, you can't go to the theater owner and say, I want my money back.
If you go to a movie theater and don't like the film and you leave before 40 minutes, you get your money back. Because you're not sitting and staying and watching the whole thing, I think is part of the point.
Really?
So if they're checking your account to see how long you've played a game for, that definitely should come into consideration, in my opinion.
Well, I just think it should be for if the game just simply doesn't work. You know? I mean, I don't know.
That's exactly why they're instituting this policy. So if it doesn't work, you don't need to spend 2 hours playing it to figure out it doesn't work. Because you're not really playing anything.
Well, here's the thing.
It took me like maybe, my record says maybe 15 or 20 minutes to figure out that it wouldn't work on all my different options.
Hmm. Well, you know what? This is the sort of thing that we have listeners for who are going to tell us what they think about this issue because they are the consumer, right? And they probably have very definite opinions on this situation. So yeah, we're asking you, what do you think? This will be our question of the week. You know, what do you think of what do you think qualifies a game to be refunded? You know, what should allow for a refund and what should be tough? You made a bad purchase.
I mean, there should be a checking of the time that has been played.
Because here's the thing. How about this, Paul? You know, there are some games that just start out great, and then, like, at the 10-hour mark, you're like, oh, God, this has gotten bad.
No, I mean, you have gotten more than 10 hours of entertainment of it at that point.
Okay. I mean, can you imagine?
You know, if it takes that long for a game to go bad on you, first of all, be happy that...
What if it goes bad after 3 hours? What if it goes bad after 3 hours? What if it goes bad after 2 hours and 5 minutes? What if it's like,
my point is, 2 hours is generous. It doesn't take 2 hours for you to figure out that a piece of software won't work on your computer.
Okay, well, I'm not talking about games that don't work. I'm talking about games you don't like, you know? You end up.
Well, they're not offering a rebate for that reason.
They are. They're offering a rebate.
Doesn't work on your machine.
For 2 hours. They basically say, if you don't like this game after playing it for 2 hours, you can return it.
You have to play it for less than 2 hours.
Oh, that's what I mean, though. For whatever reason, and there are some games that are under 2 hours. I mean, we already discussed this earlier.
I'm not.
I mean,
why are you doing this?
I know.
Why are you doing this to me?
I'm sorry. So, the question just stands, what do you think is reasonable for a gamer to get a rebate? You know? I mean, you heard us. Now it's up to you.
45 minutes, it doesn't work on my machine. That's the reason.
Okay. I get that. I get that, Paul.
No, I mean, there's my answer. Succinct.
Right. So, anyway, we have two listener feedbacks. So, why don't you take the first one, Paul?
From Arthur the Fifth, at Better Than Life, above title is a reference to the popular UK TV series Red Dwarf. Better Than Life is a virtual reality headset that rendered anything that you ever dreamed of. However, it was banned because people using Better Than Life would spend all their time in the virtual world and evidently starve to death. I don't know that I can believe that. VR will fail simply because too many big players are investing in it. Microsoft, Facebook, Apple, and Sony are all bringing out a separate headset, and no one can fault them. VR and AR have a lot of potential, especially outside of video games. My experience with AR on the 3DS was limited, but I was impressed nonetheless. Seeing your tabletop transform into a fire-breathing dragon was pretty cool, and it's sad Nintendo never followed up on this feature. I think there is so much interest in VR and AR because it was a big sci-fi hook in the 90s. As Paul mentioned, there was The Lawnmower Man. There was also Johnny Quest. Now in 2015...
the 90s kids have turned into working adults and are willing to shell out a lot of money for their childhood dreams. If there was ever a time for a VR revolution, it is now. Will it be successful as the mobile revolution? I don't think so. My iPhone is with me wherever I go, but I don't see taking Oculus Rift on the train. VR and AR devices will be anchored to your house and will probably be as revolutionary as a VHS player, which is not really a bad thing.
You know, there's also that episode, remember, with Lieutenant Barclay about his addiction to they had holo addiction. You know,
and that was kind of creepy.
Yeah. But no, it was really funny with I am Deanna, the goddess of empathy.
Yeah, right.
Stow it.
Moving on. Thanks a lot, Nintendo, for region locking your products because I don't really feel discriminated against because I live in Europe. Wow, this is one sweet humble bundle. If only the codes worked outside of US, I would probably have more than two Wii U games. Thank you, Nintendo, for catering to all your customers.
Sarcasm much? I mean.
On a different note, Paul raises a serious point. Since the creation of Humble Bundle and Steam sales, I have accumulated a lot of games in my Steam account. So far, I've properly played maybe 15 of them. Adding it to the countless PS2, PS3, Xbox, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy DS, 3DS, PSP, Wii, and Wii U titles in terms of playing new games, I should be sorted out for the next 50 years. And yet, I keep buying more. It is turning from a habit into a disorder. But if a game costs £1, as my friend puts it, quote, I could skip out on that like a can of Coke. Oh, I could skip out on that can of Coke.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's a UK expression. It has to be. It's strange. In 2005, here in the UK, it was almost impossible to find a game under £10. How things have changed. Yeah, so, I mean, they're kind of pointing out that, you know, we don't care about money anymore. Like, I don't understand what is wrong with our society.
Well, it isn't the money now. It's the time. And that is, you know, and they, you know, the old saying, time is money. Well, guess what? You maybe have the money to buy games, you know, but you don't have the time to play them. And that's a problem with me. I have a lot of games I have not played yet. I mean,
There is more media produced in this country in a single year than you could probably consume properly in 10.
Yeah, you know, it's because, you know, the technology has made it possible. I mean, YouTube, you know, YouTube is killing TV. I'd rather watch YouTube videos than watch TV.
It's not even just YouTube. It's like
Netflix.
How many Facebook articles are written every day? How many video games are released every day? It's like you cannot keep up with everything. So even just to try and play every game, I mean, I'm talking about this constantly. Even just to try and play every game I want to play, I still haven't played Twilight Struggle. I've been trying to play it for 6 months.
Wait. What was Twilight Struggle? Was it?
It was voted the best board game of all time.
Board
Game
Geek,
I think.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of Twilight Imperium, because I was thinking Twilight Imperium is the game that takes forever to play, and there's no way I can play that.
And I do just want to point out, by the way, that Twilight Struggle sounds like a My Little Pony.
I just got one of my Kickstarter board games in, well, it's not a board game, it's a card game, called Disturbed Friends, and yeah, it is very disturbing, but they did make a winning card, which is basically a point card, with a character that references me on it, so, and I posted it on Twitter. And we're going to tell you our Twitter things at the end of the podcast, so you can see it. So, anyways, moving on. World of Warcraft.
At World of Warcraft, Broken Wings and Raging Tears. My stance on this topic is that whoever wants to see more content will look for it and therefore not fly. On the other hand, whoever wants to zoom past on his legendary mount, Dragon Hoof, that was forged from my dad's credit card, should also be free to do so. I don't see why WoW can't have both. And I completely agree with you.
Yeah, you already said it last week, you know, the consumer's going to vote with their wallets on whether they want it or not. And yeah.
I mean, the impression, like, when you tell people you play WoW, the response that you will almost always get is people still play WoW.
Still 8 million people. More than any other MMO, really.
Right, that's more than any other MMO. But I think that's indicative of the entire MMO space having shrunk.
I don't know. I mean, people are playing stuff like WildStar and The Secret World, you know. And, hey, let me ask you a question. If City of Heroes was still out there, would you be playing it?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
I mean, as much as I enjoyed it at the time, there's too many other things I have to do.
Well, you're playing your quote unquote MMO that is Dungeon Keeper. it's a single player game that plays like an MMO.
Oh my god, I haven't even seen it. I haven't even seen it in months.
Really? I thought you said you had gotten back into it.
Yeah, a while ago. That was like a month ago.
Oh, well, okay.
I mean, if I'd gotten back into it, I haven't in
Well, you know the best thing about the best part about those types of games is that they want you back so bad that maybe if you come back in like 2 or 3 months, you'll have whatever special coinage that they have. You know the diamonds or whatever premium coins that you normally have to pay money for. There'll be some waiting for you to entice you to come back.
But that's exactly what I was talking about before. I'm probably not coming back because there are other things that I need to do. They are not competing with other 99 cent or even freemium apps. They are competing with the latest Disney movie. They're competing with, you know, the Batman Arkham video game. They're competing with sitting down and reading a book. I mean, I still haven't gotten to War and Peace.
I'm sorry, this is going to sound stupid for me, but has Disney Infinity 3.0 come out yet, or is it
It's coming out in time for Christmas.
Okay. By the way, another news item that was kind of small for this episode.
Oh, man, now I'm going to have to stand in line for my free E3 figure.
What?
For Infinity.
Oh.
I wasn't playing Infinity yet at last E3.
Oh, okay. The thing is that one of the items that I was going to might have included but wasn't is that Microsoft announced the date for Windows 10. It is going to be July 29th, which happens to be my birthday. And for those of you who don't know, it's going to be free to everybody who owns Windows 7, Windows 8. So, and I think Windows XP too. So I know they're going to pry Windows XP from your cold dead hands. We've heard you say this many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that the best part of that free is that it's going to be free for a year. So you're going to have plenty of time to evaluate it. You know, just check it out and see if you want to. And on the 364th day, you say, okay, I'll do it. So, another... The next letter comes from Alpha Shard. Great show, guys. Add VR, AR. I think the whole VR thing has been a long time coming. I think it's been mostly that the hardware wasn't easy to use, as pointed out that mobile games are between between clunky headsets. Okay. I'm trying to figure out what he was saying here. Add VR. I think it's been mostly that the hardware wasn't easy to use, as pointed out that mobile phones are... I think it's mostly been the hardware that wasn't easy to use, as pointed out that the mobile phones are easy to use. Between clunky headsets, TVs requiring glasses, and price tags, I'm still waiting for holodecks, personally. I do like what I've seen with altered reality hardware, where a virtual bad guy can pop through your device and in your own environment. And, you know, it's 2015. I want to see holograms of sharks trying to attack me from a movie theater.
Mm.
You know? Where's that hologram?
We all get the reference.
Yeah. What are you going to do with the funny little things? They got no wings. That was a reference to the old animated Hobbit movie. I can see why this has made many and many angry. You give them a great feature, something they've been demanding for a while, then take it away, talk about pissing on the cornflakes and smiling about it. I remember area just above Ironforge, which I can never get to because of the restriction of flying. I, like you, Jonah, haven't played WoW in years, but I've been able to... But being able to reach those hard to reach places needed flying, and now they want to limit that. So you'll have your taxi, but I guess the fancy mounts are all grounded. I don't think Blizzard can afford to give reasons for people to quit their servers. Several have already commented that they've stopped playing, as pointed out by you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
At Final Fantasy 15. This is a series that really does need its final iteration. They've gone in a direction I no longer want to follow. It's a shame, too, because it was one of my favorite series. I think that it goes to my point when you two can't keep the latest ones straight. Yeah, so we... Yeah, and they just announced that Final Fantasy Type-0 is going to be on PC, and I don't know where that fits into anything. See, I'm not that into Final Fantasy. I mean, you have Type-0, you have Ajita, you have... You know, all these Final Fantasies.
The brand is too diluted.
Yeah. I mean, they should just... I don't know. I mean, maybe they just start over you know, like they did with Tomb Raider. Just a Final Fantasy 1 reboot, boom, and then just go from there. But the problem with that is that Final Fantasy, they've changed, you know, their characters change from story to story to story. That's why you had Final Fantasy X and Final Fantasy X-2, because it was actually sticking with the same characters in the same setting. Right. You know, all the Final Fantasies took place with different characters in different settings in a different world, or at least, you know, a different type of world. You know, there was no continuity to begin with. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they should have characters that people like and just stick with those characters until the end of time, you know? I don't know what they're doing in Mass Effect 4. They keep on saying it's either a prequel or a sequel or anything like that. But if it doesn't have Commander Shepard, you know, people are going to be, maybe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, I mean, Mass Effect has been so highly customizable that I think everybody's, you know, image of Commander Shepard is already distinctly different. If they moved on to a different character...
I guess.
I mean, there's not one visual model for Commander Shepard.
No, but there is one. Well, the thing is that everybody had the same. Well, they can't say the same general Mass Effect stories because of all the decisions you can make. But you had a plot line. You know, the Reapers. You know, discovering the Reapers, dealing with the Reapers, and then you know, and whatever ending that you ended up with. But. You know, you have to get away from that entire trilogy theme, and I'm just wondering how they're going to do with it, because from what I understand, it's going to be a prequel, because the endings for Mass Effect 3 were so definitive, you know? I mean, just like the endings in Deus Ex Invisible War are so definitive that they couldn't do a sequel at all. They had to do a prequel, which was Human Revolution. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Mass Effect 4.
I don't care for prequels. That's just me.
Oh? Why is that?
I just don't.
You don't like seeing the story before the story?
No, I think that if you're telling a convincing story, then you will have included the appropriate background. I've never seen a prequel that I really, really enjoyed.
What about Puss in Boots? Did you enjoy that?
Didn't watch it.
It was really, really fun, especially the cat battle. When
care,
he
though.
And
that's the problem. I don't care enough.
He got just trust me and watch Puss in Boots. It's charming. So
possibly.
look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments, and you can follow me and Paul. My Twitter is @JonahFalcon. No space, and Paul's is @StagerMonkey, StagerMonkey.
MOUSE. No, I'm just kidding. StagerMonkey.
So if you want to contact Paul and give him your opinion about refunds, there's his
budget mismanagement.
Yeah, Don, if you're listening to this podcast, contact Paul at StagerMonkey, and you can have a nice conversation about managing your budget, your video game budget.
I am on Twitter right this second, and yeah. Nobody has messaged me.
And that's Don with two N's, by the way. So, anyways, so, you know, it's kind of a short... actually, it's longer than I thought it would be, because, like I said, it was such a short turnaround.
Yeah, but we've got places to go.
Yeah. So, anyways, I promised there was going to be a new person this week, but it didn't happen. Just keep your eye out. We're not going to tell you when there's going to be a third person, because I don't want to make promises I can't keep.
Maybe next week, maybe?
Maybe next week. So anyways, we will see you next week, and we'll have more in-depth news, because we'll have more news to discuss. Because, like I said, this is a short turnaround. And,
oh my god, your winning card is so disturbing.
Yeah, it is disturbing.
I'm glad the game is called Disturbed Friends, because...
It's a very disturbing game, yes.
I'm disturbed.
Okay, let me put it this way. It's a game in which...
No, we don't care. I'm disturbed. That's enough. We're done.
Okay.
We're done now.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Bye, Lons. What? It's good advice.